Okay. So with just these mutation processes, the stationary state is pretty simple to calculate, and we don't have any interactions between neighboring bases, so the state space is effectively four-dimensional, and one can easily write down some rate equation for the frequency, that is the probability to find a base A, G, C, or T. One just has to check how the probability of finding a base R, base A evolves in time, and we gain some probability due to transversion processes from C and T with rates P, and due to transitions from state G. That is the gain of probability, and we lose probability due to the same processes. So, and yeah, one can easily write down this master equation then and solve for the stationary state. That is, we equate that to zero. And what comes out is that all, irrespectively of P and Q, the probability to find A, C, G, or T is the same, and it's 1/4, of course. And therefore, the CG content, which is FC plus FG, is 50%. And we don't find any pair correlations, that is, pair correlation being the probability of finding an AC pair on the genome. So the pair correlations are simply given by the product of the frequencies. Why? It's dependent on this matrix, and this matrix is symmetric, so it you can solve that. It's simple. You see that this solves this equation that I don't know. D is given. That's it. So there are other models around, but I want to focus on correlated mutation processes.
So if you put the probability in the system today,
which problem?
The problem.
No. Okay. This morning we had six probabilities, and that would be these six numbers, these off-diagonal numbers here, which are given. But they won't fit in here, because here all these four are the same in my model. So that's. But I come to this point from this morning's rates. Okay. But when we analyze human just human intergenic DNA, that's what I did here. And count the occurrence of bases. We first see that the frequencies of bases it's not 1/4. The CG content is about 36%. And on top of that, in the human genome, we find correlations between neighboring sites. That is, the 2-point correlations aren't simple anymore. In this table, I give odds ratios, which is the correlation divided by the expectation by an uncorrelated model. So this number would be 1 if there would be no correlations. But here we see there's virtually no number is 1. And the most striking point is that is the lack of CG pairs. So here it's 0.2. And we gain, of course, some other pairs, which is we gain CAs and GTs and CCs and GGs. I want to now introduce. We already know.
The question is, pair is not symmetric. Maybe somehow you have a preferred direction.
Somehow. But it's slightly non-symmetric. It's, I guess, just in one point. So it's this point to one. Where is it? I don't know. Okay. So it's but that might be due to statistical errors. That's in the, so these two numbers should be the same, and okay, they aren't. But yeah, it's statistical error.
And you just take strands and you turn them around.
Sure. One would expect that they are exact. I just count one strand. So if I would count this, the Röhr strand as well, everything would be symmetric.
But you're right, there's nothing different except in the second decimal.
Yeah. So it's pretty good. Okay, now I want to come to this correlated mutation process. We already heard about this morning. That is methylation and deamination of CG pairs. So that might that depicts a DNA strand and a CG pair here on one strand. Then of course there's a CG pair on the other strand as well. And in humans, the CG pairs get heavily methylated. And once methylated, so the biochemistry is again here, but yeah, we saw that already. So that's the C here, which gets methylated, and then the only difference to a T, a thymidine, is just this amine group which sits here, and that could be easily be lost by deamination. So once that happened in the first place, that this C turns to a T here, which is not that good visible. This mismatching Watson Crick pair will be found by some repair mechanism, and it's either it's a repair mechanism, but does not know which was the correct base. So it, in one case, it decides to put back a C here, or in the other case, it puts an A here.
How does it know what mistake is?
Both strands are symmetrically. Symmetric.
But it seems like any time, my default would be if I see a TG, the T must be wrong because it's a result of deamination.
Yeah, but I guess there's not. Yeah, but okay, but on the other hand, this G could be an A. That would be a transition. Yeah, but that would be a transition process, which is more likely than a transversion process. So. I guess. Okay,
I'm just curious whether there is whether the repair mechanisms do assume, for instance, have a predominance, assuming that a PG represents a deamination.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think it's not that it's 50%, but it doesn't have to be 50%. Have an increased rate.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Okay, but the net outcome is that the CG turns into either TG or CA. So this CG goes to a TG, and this CG on the Röhr strands goes to a CA. So and this rate is estimated to be 20 25 times higher than the transversion rate. So this might be a relevant process we should encounter to analyze this data. So that's now where my modeling starts. So I have these processes, and yeah, it's just to explain what's in there. So I take a string of CATG. I introduce these point mutation rates, and on top of that, these correlated pair mutations, pointing out that these are unidirectional, so that the back reaction is not allowed, and these are bidirectional. So, now, again, I want to calculate the stationary state, but that's here now more involved. It's not just that you double or that you go to two, that the state space is now consisting of four bases, and that's explained on this slide. So let's focus on an AA pair and play this game again of gaining and losing probability, and this AA pair gains probability to be there from all these six states here due to transitions and transversions, and it loses again probability through the same processes due to the bidirectionality. But there's this correlated mutation process which might generate us AA pairs when we encounter these configurations, that is CGA. So this CG might turn into a CA, giving us a AA pair here on the right. but because the back reaction is not allowed from this process, we lose detailed balance, and even the three-point correlations will come in. So by this, we enter the realm of non-equilibrium.
Huh?
Detailed balance is. Yeah.
Why do you take the threefold that you don't have a detailed balance, or why you just don't put this an higher alphabet?
But that explodes. That's a whole hierarchy.
Why you just don't do an approximation?
Oh, that's what I do on the next slide. Of course. No. Sure. So we can cast this in some sort of differential equation again. So that's just for the AA pairs. So that's the gain of probability here and the loss of probability here, and we gain probability to proportional to this three-point correlation. And so that gives us first 16 equations for the two-point correlations, and then we had to elaborate the three-point correlations that would give us 64 differential equations, and so on. And we want to truncate this hierarchy as by the use of some cluster approximation. That is, we approximate this three-point correlation by a function of the two-point correlations, giving like that. And that is very well justified if the correlation length in our model is small. That can easily be tested by Monte Carlo simulations. So here you see the probability to find an AB pair in distance R minus the probability of finding them just by uncorrelated processes. And you see that the next the nearest neighbors correlations are not negligible, but already the next nearest neighbor correlations are pretty much zero and dies out. So,
I have a question though.
Yeah.
Seems, in your previous slide, it seems that the R process, the RFCGA, would induce correlations of the type that you're ignoring. Is that correct?
No. why? Or so? Okay. At the end, I see. I still see correlations.
Right.
So
okay.
So I'm at least neglecting not all.
The what?
I'm at least not neglecting them all. So because I still get correlations at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
And comparing that, my results with Monte Carlo simulations is pretty good. Mm-hmm. But I come to this point. Okay, but down here. So at the end, we got 16 now nonlinear differential equation, which we in fact can solve for the stationary state. And that's done here. Looks pretty complicated. All the frequencies are given, and all correlation, all two-point correlations can be calculated. So that's nice. And I just plug in some numbers, so to see what's coming out. And first I want to mention that these results are calculated by the cluster approximation, but agree very well within 0.1% with Monte Carlo simulations. So this approximation works really good. And second thing I want to mention is that the CG content is not 50%. It's actually 42%, as you see here. And that was a slide we saw this morning, which is about 42%. So put that back. So this cures the problem of the CG content. And as expected, we see now non-trivial pair correlations. so we see fewer CG pairs here. It's now 0.31. And of course, we see more CAs and TG pairs because our process produces them. Oh, there's a typo. Well, that should be exactly symmetric now, and it is. But also we see changes in pair correlations from denucleotides, which are not involved in our correlated mutation process in the first place. So also CC changes is enhanced. And we get less TA pairs and TT pairs. So by introducing this process, we mix them all somehow, and not so we turn a knob and everything changes more or less. okay, and you might want to, okay. At this point, we could introduce more processes to, or more correlated processes to match the Hume data better, but I want to do, I don't want to do that here. Instead of, I put up a net server on the web where you can play around with that. So that is done here. So you just type in the process you want to consider and the respective rates of transitions, transversions, and these correlated processes. And you press this button, and a second later you get the result. The frequencies and all correlation functions are then given to you. So, but I want to now turn to the dynamical behavior of this model. Shown here is the evolution of the base frequencies FA, FA, CA, CG, and T in time, starting from some initial condition. And we see that the stationary state is reached. It's not fast. So it's reached over tens of millions of years, so that sequences which came into the human genome, say with a human mouse splitting, they won't have relaxed until now. So the initial conditions actually are, it's an ALU sequence. I come to that point later. Yeah. So,
Why are ENTs so different and CNTs so
different? What means different? In the stationary state or up here?
In general, in the stationary state, we have the same.
Yeah, stationary state is I can compute that was these come to 0.21 and these to 0.29. They're different here because different of the initial conditions. That's the typical ALU sequence. So for the following. We should take care of the initial conditions because the genome is, or even intergenic region might not be in its steady state or stationary state. So we have to care, have to know initial conditions and have to care for the dynamics of the problem. And on at least on time scales smaller than 100 million years. That's perhaps a point one should keep in mind if one does comparative genomics. One should keep in mind that still the genome is not in the stationary state. So, No, of course not.
So,
that was the question? Okay. Of course, all of these are exponential curves. As the base frequencies, also the 2-point frequencies relax to their stationary value. And I just depict here the difference between the correlation functions at time t minus the stationary value, and that is now a log linear plot. And we see straight lines. That means they relax exponentially. And the nice thing about these two-point correlations, they relax on different timescales now. So the fastest is, of course, due to this correlated mutation process, the CG correlation, which relaxes with a timescale of 4.2 million years. And the slowest is about the AG correlations, which relax about with a timescale of 70 million years. And all these timescales I can compute with the help of my cluster approximation. So these straight lines here, they are not fitted lines. They are given by the theory. So that is more or less the model I introduced here. And the two CG times. There are actually two timescales involved in this process. So there's a fast component which dies out with this fast exponential behavior, and then there's a slower component which dies out slower. So, and of course, you see first the fast and then the slow.
Did you say the fast was correlated?
Yeah, the fast one is the correlated one. Yeah. So, of course, you due to this transition and transversion process you gain CG pairs again. So you produce them new, and they then again dissolve. So that's more or less the model I introduced, and what we learned is that we should care for initial conditions, and that we might use perhaps these correlation functions to analyze the data. And I want to do that on ALU repeats. ALU repeats are found in the human genome.
And before you proceed, did you repeat inversely also by the condition which you already know, which is running in reverse going back?
But you will end up, I don't know, anywhere. It's not. It can come from everywhere. So it's not deterministic. So, yep.
So what will you find for GM just
the ratio of 4 and R? There's this new. It's two parameters. Sure, but the picture doesn't change much. Everything is continuous more or less. So there are no phase transitions or something like that.
So when you increase these channels, eventually you can get some sort of calculation and
back to Hume, to these ALUs. So these are retro transposons. They are about 280 base pairs long, and the master sequence, which is thought to be the mother of all these ALU sequence, is well known, and it's conserved in the genome. And very CP rich. And these ALUs, so we know about the initial conditions in our model. They are about 60 million years old, so they came into the human genome before the mouse, human mouse splitting. And today there are about 10 to the 6 allo sequences in the human genome. That is about 10% of your genome is this repetitive sequence. Because it's okay, it's all new. So there are some families. So there's some old allo sequences and some intermediate and new ones. And even the youngest one are still CP rich. So and without and for that reason, because it's CP rich, it's thought that this master sequence has actually a functional role in the genome and is under selective pressure. So it keeps its high CG content even about along, I don't know, 100 million years ago, over this time period. And all these newly coming in sequences, they evolve freely. So, but this CG, this master sequence, because it's thought to be half a function, it's conserved.
It's an inferred sequence.
Hmm?
It's an inferred sequence from the whole
bunch of
issues. It's the consensus.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah. So that's.
You can build on new trees and for safe.
No, they are actually. Okay, but. Okay, that's the consensus sequence. And there are, in the human genome, there are about thousands of these, exactly these sequences. So all these 1,000 sequences can, one of them could be is of course the master sequence.
Why? Why can I just have an explosion of them very recently?
No, you know that there are old families and new families.
Well,
so,
but if they're very well conserved, how do you know that they're old families?
No, the old family won't be conserved if it has no function. So.
They could be all dead right now, all you know. Right?
Yeah.
They have died yesterday.
Yeah, that.
We don't know whether anyone of them actually done, you know. So they're all very young descendants of some hobby, but they're identical, something identical, but something has to create a recent thing. There's a some pool of that.
There are new insertions and older. So that's this family. So that.
I don't know what they're like. I know for L1 there are insertions that cause some disease to jump yesterday. For others, I don't know.
When you say the old 60 million years old, does that basically mean the oldest identifiable non-functional allele?
Yeah. So and yeah. So I come to this point. Perhaps we'll see a graph. Here's this master sequence, and I highlighted all CG pairs here. So it's really CG rich, even CP rich, CPG. CG pair rich, and now an easy thing one can do is to evolve this sequence with a Monte Carlo simulation and just count changes on CPG sites, these red ones, and changes on due to just transitions and transversions. And that can be easily done on a computer. And so what's seen here? On the horizontal axis is the difference on non-CPG sites in percent, and vertically the difference on CpG sites. And so first concentrate here on the left. We start here with no difference between the master sequence and our evolved sequence. And without any correlated mutations processes, that would be R equals zero, this new process, we would go straight up here to 0.75, 0.75. That is the stationary state is up here. And it's this stationary state where everything occurs with rate with probability 1/4. And but introducing this new process with R equals 25 times P actually, the evolved computer or the Monte Carlo evolved sequence move up here, so they tend to mutate first on the CpG sites, of course, and faster here, and then they come up here to their stationary state. And on the same plot, these crosses here, that's now data from ALU sequences. That was something I did last year, last week, and I just get a few data points from a publication from 1988 from Britton and Davidson. So these are just, I don't know, 30 points, and that should be done more rigorously in the future. But what you see is that they are of course off the diagonal, and in this region where I expect them to be with my correlated mutation process. And there's this blue one here that is R equals 10. So then there's this red one with the error bars, that's R25. And then there's a green one here, that's R equal 40. And that's something looking at these data, I would say, I would read off R should be something about 40 times P.
And the other straight
lines? And the straight lines, that's the initial slope of all these, of these courses. And they can, or again, be calculated from my cluster approximation. So, yeah. And on the right here, it's more or less the same plot. It's just blown up this region here, and now I colored the age of my evolved sequences, and. Now you can easily date ALU sequences. So these are young ones, and they go up here until 60 million years, 70 million years, these ones. So that's easily done. Yeah. So I just want to summarize. So what I did was that from the pattern of dunucleotide correlations, which I saw in the human genome, I inferred or deduced the underlying mutation process, and I showed you that this helps to cure the problem of correlations in the human genome. And we saw that the dynamical behavior is relevant, even on timescales of tens of million years. And that due to the different relaxation constants of the correlation functions, we get different clocks. And Yeah, as an outlook, this model should be incorporated in models of DNA sequence evolution, which then might be useful for comparative genomics approach to gene finding and motif finding. Yeah, thank you for your attention. Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, okay. Well, what you see in this human data, you see this loss of CG pairs and.
You don't use the process.
Yeah, okay, right. But.
There are many processes that would give you the same correlations.
I'm not so sure.
So, but can you use the?
No, okay, not one-to-one. So, but you get a feeling for what process you should introduce. It's not. Yeah. Well, depending on the pattern.
What?
Yeah, but okay, but of course, yeah. No, what I can do, I can look at it, see what striking features are, introduce some rates, and then we see whether it matches or not. So it's. Yeah. Depends on what. Yeah. And even I don't know. I even don't want to match all these numbers because I know that we are not in the stationary state. So why should I match all my numbers to stationary?
You take one particular model. You say I think that there are these parameters that are important. And then you want to see whether you can match a stationary distribution.
Yeah.
And you both can't. Just pick enough parameters.
Sure.
If this
new or your new processes are justified biochemically, yes. So. But I don't state that this is or this process might go on in every genome, say mouse or Drosophila. Because the Drosophila genome is not methylated. So there of course
you look at the dynamic difference and you tell me, I think you have this correlated change.
Mm-hmm.
Go and try to find it.
Yeah.
You do that or
yeah.
Or you would need to tell you, I think there is something going on at CG pairs. And then you say, yeah, if that's going on, I can explain the data. Can you be predictive or?
Yeah, I guess so.
But you're talking about sort of transient state with unknown initial conditions.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, for the ALUs, I know
there's an infinite number of models. Any possible model given the right initial conditions would explain the data.
Sure, yeah.
You say that you can use this for gene finding, right? But already people use the observed differences of CP, these different pairs in genes versus non-genic regions. Those are already incorporated into gene finding routines, right?
Yeah.
What is it about your model it's going to help those people more than just knowing.
It's not just CGs. It's not just CGs.
Because. I believe that they use the. You can just look at the observed frequency. Forget about being CG. You can observe the frequencies in genes and not genes, right?
Yeah.
And you can look and say, and you can use that as a predictive tool on gene finding, and that is in fact being done. So I'm asking you, what is it about your model that's more predictive than just using those observations of what exists in the genome?
It's Okay, but here it's a cheap way because I don't have to observe. So I can predict 16 two-point correlation functions by just fixing two or three parameters, two parameters, because the time scale doesn't matter. So it's computationally it's.
There's one question. They're asking people you empirically count that nuclear diet is one thing that we can define it.
You can just do this, you can define it in gene finding, you can do it empirically. You can use these sterilized things and use them empirically, and they're probably better than
But I heard about some problems that that there is not much intergenic regions in some genomes, so you just have short pieces.
So, but if you don't have these numbers, then you can't have the model. And if you do have the numbers, then you don't need the model. I mean, if there are these.
But I guess one way you can help it, let's say, if you have recent pseudogenes, so you know some of the nuclear correlations will still be there, some will dissipate. And using this model, you can tell you, well, this is a better predictor of a recently dead gene, and this is a worse predictor because this one will die out quicker than this one. And you're not going to be able to tell that which one to look at specifically, but just looking at genes from genes. Right?
Yeah.
Because there's a recent implication, yeah. And you're interested. Is the gene still functional or not? So they'll tell you, well, look at this dinucleotide and not at that one. This one will dissipate over 100 million years, and this one will dissipate over 500 years.
So this one will give you a set of locations. I also computer data from a correlation function. It gives you a set of correlation functions, which are only 80% sensitive.
I mean, there's a question of really another number of comparisons. I mean, okay, you can count things in variables, but I don't think people have done the variables before. So it's, I think it's just a new thing to do a model of. I think it's not the final say.
Actually, so incorporating this kind of dynamic implementation into the alignment of DNA sequence is already very helpful. Even so because you know, as a function, let's say with the family is raised to some power, okay, and you know what the substitution rate should be at a function time. So with this kind of thing, you really need to know the correlation changes differently. So give you some maybe reduced sort of a set of parameters.
Well, it gives you some way of thinking about it. The model way of thinking about it. Okay, I think that's all then this afternoon. So just to remind you that I'm symbolically handing over the talk. But in fact, you've got me on Monday anyway, because I'm giving the talk on Monday. And the pattern we're in the next door will be there. Thank you.